Hey there, Friday Night Movie family. This is a very special South by Southwest edition of the podcast. We will be in Austin on the ground at the Wonder House, which is being put on by the amazing folks at the University of Arizona. It's taking place at Cafe Blue, downtown Austin, March 11th through 14th. We'll be there every day from about noon to 5, recording the show with amazing filmmakers and actors and creators. But as usual, we also invite audience members to come up and be on the show, and we'll definitely have some amazing swag to give away. So make sure to follow us at Friday Night Movie on all of the socials and come and see us at the Wonder House in Austin. Here we are, and welcome to the most anticipated interview of the Friday Night Movie podcast here at South by Southwest. This movie wrapped us in a warm rock and roll blanket. It filled our hearts. It's called 299 Queen Street West. It is the story of much music told through incredible archival footage by a brilliant director, Sean Menard, who has also done some other incredible stuff, very moving stuff, particularly about the Expos, which means a lot to my family. Becky and I got to go to the premiere last night.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also joined by Rick Campanelli, also known as Rick the Temp. Legendary
Won't
VJ.
Won't be able to shake that one ever.
Legendary the VJ. I instinctively said it to you when I saw you.
You did.
Blurted out.
There are worse handles out there, I guess, right?
Yeah. Fair enough. So, Sean, congratulations. How's it feel film's been on the big screen?
Thank you. No, it was a surreal experience for sure to be sitting in an actual audience with people watching it, because I was saying in the opening that really only a handful of people have seen it. So everyone that was there last night, that's really the first wave of anyone.
Now, I mentioned this to you before, I felt the vibe in the room, which is that like when the Hip used to come play in the States, they'd play at like a small club, and then the people would show up, though, would be just like out of control. And throughout that film, there were cheers, and we all knew to cheer at the same time. Gord Downie comes on the screen, everybody cheers.
Oh, yeah.
Erica M comes on the screen, everybody cheers. How did it feel? It was like a rock show. How did it feel?
Yeah, that was unexpected, to be honest with you. I never anticipated that type of reaction live in the theater. So it was interesting to see the VJs that would get the love and the bands, and it did have a bit of that. It had a lot of energy. As someone that's been attending a few films here, I'm not even biased. There was a different vibe to how people were reacting in real time, which is really cool.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's talk about Becky is our documentary, our resident documentary filmmaker. So I'm going to give the actual, like, substantive question to Becky.
So as much filming as we do in documentary, or in your case, collecting of archive, which is an extraordinary feat, the films are really made in the edit, and I'm wondering, I mean, in my experience, and I'm wondering with this film, how much of the narrative had you constructed beforehand, and how much of it did you discover when you were going through those tapes?
That's a really good question, Becky. I did a lot of the interviews and just started building the narrative from there. I tried to go in with, I don't know, in the past on any films, when I feel I have a set idea of what the narrative's going to be, it ends up being totally different.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm open to the art of discovery, try to stay curious. When I'm having conversations with Rick or other VJs, I'll ask myself, where is this leading me? Where is it going? And then I'll try and find that thread in the archives. So I don't know if I'm answering this question.
No, I think you are.
You are.
Let me add another thread to this, because I watched all the exception of one of the shows that I wasn't as familiar with. I watched all those shows. I had different feelings about them. Although Monica Deol has always been an icon to me, I never watched Electric Circus. I didn't want to watch people dancing. That wasn't my music. I was a Combat Day Clip, intermittent interactive guy. Like and Spotlight, the blue spotlights. Like those were the things that I loved. One of the things that I thought was so incredible about this film is the narrative thread that tied them all together as part of this story. So I learned so much there.
I did too, Shai. I was there for 10 years of my life, and I learned so much too. More so the beginning of it all. You know, And you're right, Becky. All these hours and hours of footage to go through, and I'm sure there were still tons that we haven't even got to. But how someone puts that all together, and the way Sean did it, and his team did it, and that film, it brings you back. It tells a beautiful story. You learn a lot, and it was brilliant in my eyes. Watching that,
Rick, you're quite the hype man. Oh. Respect.
And it's like, so okay, we're fans, great, we love it, but to have Rick, who lived it, endorse this film.
I wanted to watch it again right away after it ended.
Becky, it's like, and I said, I don't know how long this film has been going on, but you can just go on the rest of the night.
Yes, right? Yeah. I could have gone, it was, what, 120 minutes? I could have gone 240 minutes or more of that.
We need the series now.
Yeah, we do need a series.
It was intended to be, get the viewer lost in these moments, so that's why I leaned into just archives. I feel if you use on-camera interviews, it creates this almost, if Rick is speaking and you see him in 2023 and he's coming from a reflective standpoint, it can be jarring for the audience in a sense, or not jarring, but it will just, it has you time hopping a little bit. Mm. Whereas this, when Rick is speaking about a moment that's actually going on and you're seeing that moment and you're hearing him.
It's like director's commentary.
No, yeah. You 100% pull it off. We felt like we were living this. That we were going through this in time.
I kept grabbing my heart going like, yes. Oh. Now, same. I will say this, same. Though. The man hasn't aged. He might have aged.
Yeah, I know, it is.
Well, it's a little unnerving. I did sell my soul to Moses Neimer in his office all those years ago. And when you make that deal with Moses, yeah. No, thank you. I feel 95 inside.
Okay.
Wear and tear over the years. But no, I appreciate that. I have my parents to thank.
And all those snow jobs probably. Yeah, snow jobs. Cost you.
Yes, they did.
Inside organs, but.
Oh, yeah. Breaking bones.
For our listeners, snow jobs were the equivalent of these MTV spring breaks, but they were at ski mountains and they were the coolest party ever.
And then they added some sand jobs.
That's true. Okay, there you go.
I love the names of the show is very risque, but we brought people down to Daytona as well. Yeah.
That's okay. We're gonna bounce back and forth. I'm gonna take advantage of Rick's being here. So one thing that dawned on us. So our philosophy on this show is if you're on the show, you're part of the family. And Becky turns to me during the show and she goes, the movie, she goes, holy shit, the VJs taught us how to interview, like, and we didn't start interviewing until 25 years later. It's not like we're descendants of you.
Of you.
Well, basically, it's just conversation, you know. We're just talking and having a conversation. Anyone can do it.
Well,
no? I don't know.
Yes, except that people don't when they're interviewing someone.
It's actually very difficult to be yourself on camera. They say it and they advise it, but you end up becoming almost a different or you have an idea of what someone on camera should be, and people end up imitating that, or even on the radio, right? They put on that voice. Yeah. It's very difficult to be natural.
It's true because my first few interviews, and they were terrible. They were awful. I was so uncomfortable with the surroundings, and I wasn't educated in the world of television. I'm a phys ed grad, so I do remember, and I told you, I remember them coming up to me right away saying how bad it was. They were just open with me and they're honest with me, and I appreciate that because that makes you go home and research more and put in more work and be better at your job. And that's what happened to me over time. It took a long time, but I finally got there, and they said some pretty hurtful things at first. Well, and they also said, Rick, when are you gonna get an edge? We want you to be more edgy. Like, they sort of at first were trying to change the way the person I was, but it was all for rock and roll.
To us, because like, so my entry point is Steve Anthony, Erica, and Michael Williams.
Same here.
So to us, when you got on, it was like one of us. We're on this show. The thing that I loved about you so much was the grace with which you were able to be yourself so effortlessly, even in the strange situation. So I'm gonna bring you back to a memory I have. I watched this live on TV. And if you don't remember, it's totally fine.
Yeah, all right, let's do this.
Okay.
No, I love this.
You were interviewing one of my favorite artists, Our Lady Peace, Rain Maida. Yeah. And you were in, like, Disneyland. Like that.
I remember. I know where you're going with this.
And you asked him some fun question. And he goes, we're not doing a Mickey Mouse interview. And my personal reaction was, I want to watch the buddy cop show
of Rick and Rain Mehta. Like, Rain Mehta as the straight man and Rick, like, on an adventure.
Shy, you're hilarious, man. I'm glad you brought this up because Rain and I keep in touch to this day. I just reached out to him the other day, and he constantly tells me, Rick, I'm so sorry I was so tough on you back then. He says, why was I like that? Like, Chantel has really loosened him up over the years. And Rain, I think, realizes how much of, well, in that world, when you're a rock star, you're a rock star. You want to talk about rock and roll. You want to talk about your music. You don't want to talk about Mickey Mouse. I think I got that mostly from the boy bands, those fun questions. But thanks for reminding me. I'm sweating right now.
If there is ever a doubt that you are Canadian grown up, it has now been it's been cleared up.
So I'm gonna contrast that. You know who an artist who I think would have, and you picked one of the iconic Much Music interviews, and this is a question overall of how you pick the artist, Sean, but you picked the iconic on the hotel balcony of Erika M and Nirvana. Like, I remember that, and I remember it would replay in the spotlights and all the different things. I bet you Kurt Cobain would have been, the way the elements you showed, he would have been probably way cooler with Mickey Mouse questions than like rock star questions. What do you think, looking back at these people, and how did you pick which interviews were going to be in the film?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that one, because the Kurt Cobain Nirvana, a lot of the Nirvana fans will actually cite online that interview with Erika M and Much Music was the best he ever had.
Oh, wow.
And she actually opens, it's not in the film, but she opens with a simple question of asking him the last book he read.
Oh.
And you see, I mean, he's in a press junket, press cycle that day, and you see him start to just open up and unwind, and she starts to have this great conversation. And that was the beauty of a lot of these interviews. Picking the artists was challenging, but what I decided to do is I always envisioned this film, how it would be viewed 10, 20, 30 years out. So I tried to pick artists that had that legacy of that period of time.
Generational?
Absolutely. Yeah. And obviously, I would earmark on something that they said that allowed me to get from point A to point B, or if they're saying something poignant or about the process of creativity, then, you know, or it's helping the narrative in any way, then that would automatically make it in.
I'm wondering, because from the moment it begins to the moment it ends, it is just the most wonderful archival footage, right? Like, everything we're seeing, we love. What ended up on the cutting room floor? What didn't make it in? What are the moments that we... Because that's now what I'm thinking about. When we joke around, where's the series? So were there any special moments that you felt...
Definitely Green Day taking my microphone and putting it into a microwave on Yonge Street outside Sam the Record Man, or whatever it was at the time, when they played the alley there. You're right, Becky. There's so much. And I don't even know if you knew about most of the stuff that people were sending you. Like, we couldn't watch it all back in the day.
Right.
So much.
I edited the film mainly in... I was telling Rick last night, it was 72 straight days. So I'll edit.
Whoa.
I used to edit in long periods of 15, 18-hour days and just crush it. I find if I get away from it, it's almost similar as a writer. Writers have to show up every day to stay in that world and those characters, because what benefits you have is when you walk away or you're doing something else, you're still ruminating about something. So it allows you to solve those problems.
You only edited this in 72 days? But correct. Straight days, that's kind of...
Yeah, I would write it on a board, and every day I was done, I would wipe it in, you know, 71, 70, 69. I have a photo of me with the zero. That was a big day.
That's a banana schedule, but that also is short for a feature documentary. I have spent years I've spent like a year or two in an edit for a film.
To me that was long. My last film I did in 2 weeks, and that went on worldwide on Netflix. So I don't...
plug the film.
The Carter Effect.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Oh, right, Vince Carter story.
Yeah, it was executive produced by Drake and LeBron James.
Oh, my gosh. And so
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so... No,
the brilliance of Sean Murnard right there.
I guess you have these edits
a mystique about... We were at a party last night, and there were some folks from the Canadian film world there, and we mentioned you, and they were like... Sean Menard, he's an outlaw. He's doing his thing.
I don't take Canadian tax credits. I self-financed.
Wow.
Because it allows me to have that freedom and that creative control. And when you take other people's money, you guys probably know this, you lose that.
This is something we talk about a lot.
And that's, I think...
That's why this podcast loses so much money, because I won't take anyone's money.
For you. No one's offering us money. We'll see when someone offers.
Two totally different stories right there.
Yeah. But, you know, it just depends which perspective you're telling it from. Now, when it came to choosing the, last archival question, sorry, archival films to me are the absolute...
Same.
The biggest mountain to climb. I truly have so much respect that you did it in one shot. When it came to tracking down the footage, you talked about 95% came from the actual archives, right? Something like that. And then that last little bit from people sending you tapes. Now you're interviewing all the VJs and everyone who worked there. They're telling you stories, and then you're going out and you're hunting down that footage. Is that what you're doing, or you already have specific footage and you're saying, okay, tell me about, I want to put this in the film, tell me about it. How are you balancing that?
Okay. Hybrid. So I would lead to some ways that I knew I was crafting or was going to build based on previous interviews. So I'm almost cutting as I'm in production.
Okay.
Amazing.
If that's a, that's yes, a peek that, behind that, the curtain.
Yeah, that's yeah. rad.
So I'm kind of having an
it's
idea.
Like jazz.
Yeah, so I'm. It's.
I mean, it's music. I guess that's like it's like you're jamming with the footage.
Maybe that's why I struggle getting financing is because they really want to see what the film is going to be, and I push back on that. I don't know. How can I know if I haven't spoken in the world of documentary? If I'm about to interview 15 people, I don't know. I can push and I can steer it, which I see in a lot of documentaries is a problem that I have. Is they come in with a set idea and then they grind out that narrative no matter what, even if they're not getting those sound bites.
We can talk off the record more about that. yep.
But to me, if the narrative is solely, which this film is through the VJs that live this experience, let me have these conversations and let me figure out what it is. Because there were paths I wanted to go down that it wasn't coming from the stories, so I abandoned that and went forward.
So we love movies. I assume you're lovers of movies. And I want to make sure we get to our Mickey Mouse question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to this day, I think about that moment before I do an interview. Like, so here comes the Mickey Mouse question, okay?
Well, only one. Now, I feel like we could interview.
Like an icebreaker type question, yeah?
Yeah. Or just like, it's just like,
lighten up the mood.
Let's have fun.
We would be talking.
Yes, I like that.
At the table. Like, we don't, our policy on the show, we don't interview people we don't want to hang out with. So... Okay.
Nice. This is my favorite interview I've done through South by. I just realized. I feel very comfortable.
Just so you know, when we heard you all say that in Much Music, where I'm like, that's what we say every time. We want everyone to walk away from this show saying like, oh.
Looking back on their day.
And they're like, oh, like, this was the one was I liked the most. So, okay. The movie's going to be a hit. It's going to be massive, okay? I know it. Then Netflix, Hulu, whoever, Crave, they're going to come calling. And they're going to say, we got to turn this into a series. Or
a narrative.
A streaming narrative.
Yeah, we're gonna now do the fictionalized narrative.
So you're now producing, show running, you're picking the cast, you get to pick the cast all time.
So okay. Like we can go back to actors of like the 1950s if you want. To today. These are the rules of our world.
Yeah,
okay?
This is how we're playing today.
This is how we're playing.
Okay. So like for example, we're very confident that if we were to all-time cast Rick, we're going with Breckenmeyer. You know who Breckenmeyer is?
Who's Breckenmeyer?
You ever see Road Trip or Can't Hardly Wait? He's a
Clueless.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's all coming back to me now. Yes.
He's the skateboarder
in Clueless.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. With the long flow.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that choice.
I was going to go modern day Jeremy Renner.
Oh yeah.
Yes, of course.
Because Jeremy Renner also, because Jeremy Renner doing comedy would be great, and Rick. Character would be funny, and that's amazing. Modern day Jeremy Renner. Okay, so for like Michael Williams, I was really marinating on this because the film illuminates because he was already very established rap city. Like I didn't know about his trailblazing until I saw the film, but to me, if I look at current actor, I don't know if you've seen Creed 3, but Jonathan Majors, who is just I don't know how many Oscars that guy's gonna get in his life. It's gonna be a lot.
He's gonna be a powerhouse.
Yeah. But he would make the most amazing Michael Williams. So who else would who's gonna be your Erica M?
I'm not the filmmaker, you are, but who do you have in mind?
Play together. No. Jam on it. I love the Jeremy Renner casting. That's amazing.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because when they were younger, of course, right?
I mean, whenever, yeah. You can pick any time, though. You want to pick James Cagney, you can.
This is like the...
Like one of the things we were thinking is, like, although they don't look alike, but right, Steve right. Anthony, like, Ryan Reynolds is Steve Anthony.
Yeah, the vibe.
Ryan Reynolds. Of a Steve,
I could
of
see that.
Or Owen Wilson.
Oh!
Owen Wilson can be a Steve Anthony.
Amazing.
Two wacky characters.
Yeah.
That's way better.
Spicoli?
Oh, yeah. Young Sean Penn. Like, young Sean, Sean Penn.
Young Sean Penn.
Not serious Sean Penn.
Yeah. See, that's
not Rain Mehta in that interview.
Not Rain Penn.
That's amazing. Okay, Erica M, like Winona Ryder, Marissa Tomei, like if you go current, there's an actor who I'm sure you're not familiar with, but I think is amazing. Younger actor, her name is Dana DiLorenzo. She was in the Ash vs. Evil Dead, the Evil Dead TV show. She's one of my favorite actors. She
would
make
a great Erica M.
Because she's an amazing
talk. Becky, you kind of have a vibe of the actress in the 90s. She was in Groundhog Day.
Andy McDowell.
Did you ever get Andy McDowell?
No, thank you.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I ever get... No one is ever like, you look like, or you have the vibe up. But thank you.
That's a good point. I will take it.
Yeah.
That's
will
all right. So
it.
Now we're casting Becky in the movie.
Yeah. Becky's in the movie.
That's what we'll start. Friday Night Movie Podcast opening scene.
I can only do the if they're in front of me. I know
it's hard. It's a great question. It's a fun question.
Gave some great answers.
Oh yeah, these are great answers. You don't have to spend a lot of time. Okay.
I had one for Rick though. I had another Mickey Mouse one for.
Okay, go for Mickey Mouse.
Go for Mickey Mouse.
Any artist that you never had the chance to interview, either because they had already passed by the time you were, you know, at MTV, or they didn't exist yet.
Most definitely Becky. No, it's okay. I know exactly.
Will you edit
that
out?
There's an MTV question we want to ask, and it's in our brains, and I can feel it telepathically.
No, listen, I'm going to give you a couple answers to that question. First of all, the Kurt Cobain interview. And we talked about it earlier. I watched that interview religiously. I taped it on my VHS. I rewound that. I watched it over and over and over. I was a huge Nirvana fan. I was fortunate enough to see them in concert. I was in the mosh pit, and I caught Dave Grohl's drumstick. And it was a moment when I was back in university. So, and then, you know, mid-90s, 94, my life and most people's lives that were into Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
It was traumatic.
I watched you actually, not to sound creepy, but obviously I wanted to see your reaction during the film. And I looked over at Rick during that part of Kurt Cobain and when he passes away. You were sad.
I was sad. I'm sad right now just thinking about it because I became so close with Dave and interviewing Dave over the years and Taylor as well over the years. And Taylor and those guys were just such salt of the earth guys, like fun, intelligent, talented musicians, great human beings. So when you start losing these people in life that you become close with, so going back to the question, Kurt Cobain, I've always wanted to interview Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
Obviously, it's not going to happen. And the assignment that I always wanted back in the day, and George Strombo always got it, like the South by Southwest assignment George always got at Much Music, and I always wanted to come to this. So to get it, in years later with ET Canada, it was awesome to be here. Now to be here in a different, you know, aspect of it all, answering questions, it's wonderful.
And how about you? Who do you wish you?
Should I show my hotel guest card? Does that help? I mean, some of us is here.
Yeah, I don't know. How about you? Who would you have interviewed?
I wanted to actually know who, because I never really got to ask this question because it wasn't a question I would have asked Rick for the film. But who was your top interview that you, when you look back?
100%. I think it was the Chili Peppers when they all came in for the first time as a group. All four of them came in.
That's because
like they'd come in, but
a fan of the band,
a huge fan of the band, like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, Foo Fighters, like all that genre was my, like everyone thought it was the boy band genre that I was into, and that was fun doing that stuff.
Actually, until I met Rick, I thought he was a pop star fan. And then you started to tell me.
Listen, I respect those guys for doing what they're doing, but my genre is alt rock.
Yeah,
like, that, you know, No Doubt and all that, you know, all that stuff catapulted my love for music.
That is amazing. All right. I assume we've got to get going.
Yeah.
We have to wrap?
Okay.
So last question is this. One of the themes, open secret in Sorry, the film is 299 Queen Street West. Queen Street West. Wherever you can watch it, you got to watch it. If you're at South By, watch it. When it's on TV, we're going to promote it like hell. One of the open secrets in Canada, and every artist who went on it, and you illuminated this in the film, is that Much Music just smoked MTV. But what the film does so well is it provides the evidence. We always knew it, but the visual evidence and the thesis is there. I know you didn't go in with an agenda, but how did you go, Ashan, and take us out on that, how did you go about crafting that argument?
I actually, at one point, was going to show clips of MTV, and then it dawned on me that it was just more powerful to stay in the Much Music world and the sound bites driving that home. So I love that you brought that up, because that was the goal. I want to bring that evidence to the viewer that's watching it, why this is so powerful for those that didn't experience it outside of Canada. So that's... respect.
That was a great, yeah, and there was a voice and a face from MTV there last night. I don't know if you know, Caduce was in the audience watching the premiere, and he had a big smile and clapped and loved the film as well. So he understands both worlds. He auditioned for the VJ Search back in 2000. Mm-hmm. We much didn't give him a shot. MTV hired him on, so he knows both worlds, and I'm sure if you sat down with Caduce right now, he would tell it the way it is and the way you did, with Much Music being a little stronger of it.
I remember he put his hand up in the post Q&A. He didn't ask a question. He just said thank you and said how much better it was than MTV. I answered, you're welcome, of course.
Well, thank you so much, Sean Menard. Congratulations on the incredible film and the ride that you're on right now. And Rick Campanelli.
Oh, my pleasure.
The legend.
Thank you.
So great to be here. Have an amazing rest of the
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Friday Night Movie, the sibling rivalry and pop culture podcast. Join the Friday Night Movie family by following @FryNightMovie on all of the socials and visiting our website, FryNightMovie.com. Our theme song is by What Does It Eat? And make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.